And salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are your video game podcast here with you for the week of Friday, September 9th of the year 2016. How's it going, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages? We welcome you back to this show that is downloaded and beamed right into your ears, and at some point in the future, with the appropriate technology, straight into your brains. I am Mike the Legend, the man who is the host with the most on this program. Well, I'd like to say I'm the host with the most, but I share this platform with another. I can't take all the credit and glory for myself. I also have to share some of the blame sometimes.
Indeed.
With you!
Yes, I am the other voice on this program. This week I'm Dennis, the man who's pretty sure he's a homeowner.
That's quite the inflection at the end.
Yes.
So there's a lot of uncertainty around.
Yes, I'm pretty sure I'm a homeowner. As you know, as anyone who's been listening to this program for the last little while knows, I guess I've been searching for a house on the house hunt.
Indeed, you've been looking to acquire a domain of your own.
Indeed.
A domicile.
And, I currently am in a point where an offer was accepted and now it's completely out of my hands with the bank and a lawyer and the realtor and the other lawyer and all this other stuff. So,
at this point, you're not terribly sure what the hell's going on.
No, it's a little bit, hopefully I hear back soon. I think I'm going to do a check-in phone call at some point, tomorrow, because we're recording on the evening of Thursday, and I will be making a phone call on the Friday.
Indeed.
But, yes.
Just a pleasant little, hey, how's it going? Let me just make sure everything's good. Everything's good. Still good.
Yep.
Yep. Just let him know that you're still, aware of what's going on. And, congratulations on your potential home.
Well, thank you.
That looks to be far along in the process. I believe this is the last step until, keys are exchanged, right?
Well, the last step before handshakes are done and I have to pay a bunch of money for transfer. A bunch of money. I would just like to say that one more time. A bunch of money for, land transfer fees and lawyer fees and fees and whatnot. All of the various fees involved in buying a house. So
it is not a cheap endeavor.
No. So I'm bracing for that. I want that part to be over so I can then just have it behind me and, start actually breathing again and
start, filling the bank account fund again.
Yes.
Yes.
Letting that really top itself back up and then start actually the process of settling in and starting to, do some renovations, because I'm not buying a fully renovated house by any means, but I'm not buying a crappy house or anything like that. So,
well, I mean, with any house, ultimately, I believe someone will want to put their own unique take on it to make it their own, be it a new coat of paint, hardware, door handles, or what have you.
Yeah. Or in my case, I think I'm pretty sure I'm going to be revamping the basement entirely.
Excellent. Man den.
Man den. Also, fleshed out recording studio, etc.
Excellent.
But yes, on that note, because I will, in the next couple of weeks or so, I will be 2 to 3 weeks. Obviously, I will be preoccupied with the processes and such of both moving, and buying a house and all of those things. So,
well, buying the house first, then moving.
Yes. Can't put the horse before the cart. After the cart, I should say.
Yes, you can't start moving your stuff now.
No, it makes no sense.
Also, still, that would be somewhat illegal.
Yes, I don't have possession. The possession date isn't actually for a little bit, but as such, well, the arcade, the place where the arcade normally records will be in shambles again.
In shambles, completely torn apart, perhaps even in transit.
Yes.
At various stages. And so because of the rather large life change that Dennis is making, we're going to be taking a bit of the break. a bit of a break, excuse me. Assuming everything goes with this house, and certainly both our fingers are crossed.
Indeed.
As it sounds like it's far along in the process. And
I'm knocking on wood, as fake as it might be on my desk here.
Well, it sounded real to me.
Yep.
That if it was to go awry now, that'd be devastating. So certainly we are hoping for the best, or I'm hoping for the best for you to come through, as it's, it sounds like you're, you really like this house. It's a nice place, and, it's, gone along fairly, tickety-boo thus far. So, hopefully no hang-ups. And if there are no hang-ups, then you will get the house, get possession, and have to do all the things a person does when they take possession of a new house. And so we will be off for a few weeks to allow Dennis to move.
Yes.
Because really, anyone who's moved at any point knows it's a big time consuming process.
It sucks. Moving sucks.
It is the worst.
I mean, adding the stress of buying a house into that,
mm-hmm.
and it really sucks. I mean, it's a self-inflicted sucks, certainly. I could just keep living where I'm living forever, but you know, can't do that forever all the time.
You've made the choice. You wanted a house, you wanted this house, and you're going for it, and that is your prerogative. As an adult, Mr. Indeed. Adult.
Yes, Mr. Adult, which is, not quite my legal name, but I'm not against the idea of that being my name at the moment in my head. I'm not going to put any sort of legal documents together or anything to
Well, you're doing a very adult thing in buying a house.
Yes.
And again, because he will be, going through the process of house acquisition, finalization, possession, moving, getting established and just unpacking from boxes in said new house. We'll be taking a bit of a break to allow him time to focus on that, because it becomes something that takes all your focus, whether you want it to or not.
Yep.
So because of that, this will actually, assuming everything goes ahead as planned with this house, we'll be off for the next couple weeks. And just to warn you from now, we will reiterate it and we'll have it on our website and social media, everything of that nature. But again, we'll let you know from now, our next show is currently slated for October 7th, the first Friday of October, come hell or high water.
Providing that nothing goes wrong here.
Exactly.
That's the plan.
Yes.
Let's just hope nothing goes wrong. If something goes wrong, well, we might have a show by then, but well, I'll have bad news about my life, but regular news about video games, perhaps at that point.
In which you will speak of through tears.
Yes.
Just the tears constantly streaming down your face as we make for a very awkward podcast at that point, but hopefully it does not come to that.
Yes, I hope it doesn't come to that. No one wants that to come. No one wants to listen to that. I don't want to record that. So. Fingers crossed, exactly. Knock on wood.
But again, if all comes past with this house, we'll let Dennis move. And again, Friday, October 7th will be our next episode. And in that light, this is kind of a big week of news to go out on if we're taking a couple weeks off, because, wow, we already knew that there was going to be the PlayStation event happening this week. That was announced back in, a couple weeks, I'd say. Late July, early August, when Sony put out the invitation to various media outlets to invite them down on Wednesday, September 7th, to the PlayStation Theater in Times Square in New York City. Little did we know there would be other surprises that day beyond just the reveal of what was termed PlayStation Neo, other things, which is now, we now know to be PlayStation 4 Pro. We'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about, some other surprises, from Wednesday as well in just a moment, but we have to get to our first ludicrous leadoff, and it ties in nicely with an iconic sci-fi series which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this week. Of course, I speak of Star Trek.
Yes.
And one of the, I guess, recurring elements through all four original, or the first four TV iterations of Star Trek, and I believe into some of the movies as well, was the voice of the computer.
Yes, the iconic voice of the computer, which didn't change because it was the same lady who did all of them. That lady being the, the incomparable Majel Barrett. I mean, she, when she wasn't playing the computer voice, you might have remembered her as, Loaxana Troi, the ambassador to Beta Zed.
Mm-hmm. And also and the also eccentric.
The, yeah, the eccentric ambassador of Beta Z and the mother of Counselor Deanna Troi.
Indeed.
Of the Enterprise on Next Generation.
And Luxana Troi, who also sometimes had a thing for Captain Picard.
Yes, and in one episode of Deep Space Nine, had a thing for Odo.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, but, yeah, so she was the voice of all of the computers in, well, the original series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. I don't recall if she was, if her voice popped up in Enterprise or not.
I don't think so.
I didn't really watch much of Enterprise.
Given that Enterprise was set in such an early time in Starfleet history, I don't know if their computer had
a voice.
Yeah,
well, that's fair enough. But, yeah, regardless, Majel Barrett was the voice of every computer system.
Mm-hmm.
She had a very distinctive voice, and she did the computer system well. Unfortunately, she did pass away in 2008. Sad day, of course. But before she passed away, I guess she did, her and all the Roddenberry folks, because she was a Roddenberry after all, she was
married to Gene Roddenberry.
Married to Gene Roddenberry. That's probably how she got the part.
It helps.
I mean,
it helps to know someone on the inside.
Yes, but, yeah, they did have the foresight to record her phonetically before she passed, which I would imagine would have been an arduous process, but given how much she had recorded her own voice for the computers in the past, I'm sure she would have gladly obliged. And also seeing the impact that Star Trek had had up until, you know, right before she died anyways, seeing how iconic it had become,
mm-hmm.
she must have just thought, well, okay, I might as well do this. Maybe they want to have, keep having computer voices for things and, you know, recording all of the phonetic sounds required to piece together a computer voice.
And even if it's not used, at least to have the option available.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good idea, and it's a good bit of future-proofing done by the Roddenberry people.
It really is.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was 8 years ago, and nothing really came of it up until now, which is not really that surprising. I mean, what do you do with all of those phonetic sounds? You need a reason to do that, I mean, or do something with it. And there is a good reason coming.
Indeed, as we have spoken of and others know of, but if you don't know, we'll tell you, there's a new Star Trek TV series coming in January called Star Trek Discovery. And it sounds like that program or that series will make use of Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer once again.
Indeed.
Making use of the pre-recorded phonetic sounds that she and others so wisely chose to record back in 2008 and before 2008 as well, will make her voice available to reprise the ship's computer's voice once again. But it also sounds like that they might use her voice not just on a show, but for other applications, say, on your smartphone.
Yes. You know that, particularly if you have an Apple device, there you already have that assistant, you know, built into your phone. The name is Siri. You've probably heard of Siri by now. I mean, if you haven't heard of Siri, you're living under a rock. And you're probably not even listening to this podcast, so it doesn't really matter.
Exactly.
So we're not speaking to anyone who has never heard of Siri. Guaranteed. But at this up to now, it's normally been kind of difficult to sideload a new voice for Siri onto your phone. Apple doesn't really like you doing that. But it seems like they're sort of trying to get that done. Or they're in talks with Apple anyways, and why wouldn't Apple want the iconic voice of the Star Trek computer as an option for the Siri voice?
That's true.
I mean, it doesn't hurt anything.
Let's face it, iPhones, iPads, and whatnot are based on the technology they saw in Star Trek anyway.
Yeah.
Basically ripped whole cloth from the original series and next gen.
Yeah. I mean, those duty roster tablets
mm-hmm.
that you would just see, we have those now.
Yeah, that's the iPad, that's the iPhone. There you go. Just right there.
Yeah.
So, but there's no timeline on when that application or the ability to put Majel Barrett's voice on your phone. No idea when that will come. If it does eventually come to fruition, I believe it's still in the developmental stage, but at least we know that Star Trek Discovery is coming in January. To the initial 2-hour pilot is going to air on CBS. The rest of the series is being used as original content on CBS All Access, an online streaming service in the United States for the CBS network. In Canada, it will be distributed by Bell, I believe, on both CTV and the Crave TV service.
I thought you were going to say through legal means. It's going to be distributed in Canada exclusively through BitTorrent.
Well,
as hidden by VPN networks and private internet access.
We never advocate for that. We simply say...
Well, I mean, everyone knows it's a thing,
though. Exactly. You know how to research things on the internet. We're not going to point you in directions.
No, we're not going to show you how to torrent things, no. But it's a thing. Everyone knows it exists.
You know how to, you know, figure these things out for your own. People are smart these days, thanks to the internet. So, yes.
Unless, of course, it does show up easily on something like Crave TV, which, as a subscriber of said service, I will watch.
You still have that?
Yeah.
I thought you were cursing it because it didn't give you Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but it has lots of other HBO stuff and lots of other like Comedy Central, Comedy Network stuff as well. Basically, I can pirate stuff. I just don't like doing it. I mean, I'll do it if I have to, but I don't want to.
Fair enough.
I don't like that Game of Thrones is making me a criminal. Damn you, Game of Thrones.
Technically, your criminal ways are making you a criminal.
Oh, okay.
Let's not shirk our personal responsibility here.
Apparently, I'm on trial in Cardassia, where the, the sentence is already known before the trial starts, and only guilty people go to trial. Yes, I get it. Fine. I see.
And? How do you plead?
Well, not guilty, but it clearly doesn't matter.
So you've admitted your guilt. Excellent. Okay. Let's move right on to sentencing.
Yes.
Let's not. And instead, let's move on to our second ludicrous leadoff this week. And, you know, as I said off the top of the show, we knew Wednesday would be Sony's press conference. And then it was just a couple weeks before the event that word came out from Apple. They would be holding a press event of their own, separate, different press event that morning in advance of Sony's, the two not connected in any way, shape, or form. Ultimately, Wednesday's Apple event came to show the show off the new iPhone 7, iPhone 7S, the earpod things, the lack of a
headphone jack. Big sticking point for a lot of the technological world.
Having
people cry that Apple is continuing to represent the worst of Silicon Valley's like head up the ass viewpoint about things. But there was one big surprise from that Apple press conference that no one saw coming, I think.
No, anytime you hear of an Apple press event, you can just look at their product line and simply deduce and expect, okay, it's going to be likely to be a new one of this, or this. As we saw, again, new iPhone model, new Apple Watch series announced, blah.
Yeah.
Okay, nothing surprising, just iterative technological progress on existing products. Cool, great, boring, next. But the real surprise came when an unexpected visitor took the stage to Apple's event.
Yeah.
That person being Nintendo, like, guru Shigeru Miyamoto.
Yeah, you know, the creator of Mario. Him?
Yeah.
Iconic video game developer.
One of the most important figures in modern video gaming.
Yes. And he came to the stage to essentially say that Mario's coming to iOS.
It's true. He announced, not only did he announce the next mobile game on the part of Nintendo and DNA, but he announced that it will feature Nintendo's iconic plumber character in, of all things, an Endless Runner game.
Which, to be honest, good idea. out of all the different types of mobile games I could see them slotting Mario into, an Endless Runner is probably the easiest. And it makes the most sense.
This is true. And the game is going to be entitled Super Mario Run. Quite simply called Super Mario Run. The other interesting fact is it's going to release first on iOS. There's an element of timed exclusivity to this.
Yes, they actually didn't mention any sort of Android at all. Of course, why would they? It's an iOS. It's an Apple event. There's no Android mention whatsoever.
No.
But
it came out after that, by virtue of saying that it will come to iOS first.
Yeah.
It implies,
obviously it will come out to Android at some point. Look at Fallout Shelter. Why would they limit themselves like that?
Exactly. Why would you not release something for close to half the mobile gaming market?
Yes. But this one, it's interesting because it's not going to be free to download.
Unlike Miitomo.
Yes, unlike Miitomo, it will cost money. However, they do assure that as such, you know, it will not have microtransactions.
Which I'm surprised by.
Yes, though there has been speculation that, you know, Nintendo might eventually relent and just decide to go down that dark path, because why wouldn't they?
With a title featuring, Mario, I kind of expected there to be microtransactions off the hop, because people will pay.
And as an Endless Runner, it's an easy opportunity to slot in different characters that you run as.
Sure can.
You can buy a Wario. You can buy any of, just think of all the different characters that you could buy. They're pretty much all there in Smash Brothers.
Or Mario Party.
Or Mario Party or any of these big, or Mario Kart or any of these big Nintendo games that have like 40 characters. Each, maybe not as iconic as Mario, but iconic enough that fans of the series would know who at least some of them are and maybe spend a couple dollars extra unlocking them.
It's true. Perhaps even extra levels, power-up items. The other interesting thing is we learned, the idea of Super Mario Run is that, it will feature Mario himself running from left to right, in a more standard 2D platforming fashion, utilizing the aesthetic of the new Super Mario Brothers games, but applying it to old school, platforming Mario games of yesteryear. But you'll have to run through, jump, avoid enemies, and also collect coins. The interesting aspect of the coins is that you can later use them to buy items and build a mushroom kingdom of your own. Apparently, it will have a meta game to it where you can build your town around Bowser's castle, Peach's castle, or what have you, but put in shops, put in various things, and you will spend the coins collected in the game to purchase those from the in-game store.
Yes.
And I could imagine sets of those coins also being a microtransaction.
Yes. So they did say that there's no microtransactions in the game, but I would not discount the fact that there might be at some point.
I could imagine there would be investor pressure to put microtransactions in there. You know, because you have a game that has Super Mario on iOS. Money, please.
Yes. But yeah, all this aside, there was an interesting couple of other interesting points that were made. First of all, the fact that they were using the fact that you can play the game with one hand as a major selling feature. I found that so amusing that, you know, on the one hand, yes, of course, but on the other hand, really? You're going to try to sell it that way? Try to say that, you know, for the first time ever, players will be able to enjoy a full-fledged Super Mario game with just one hand, giving them the freedom to play while riding the subway, or my favorite, eating a hamburger. We want as many people as possible to be able to enjoy playing as Mario, and they'll be doing it in a brand new game, Super Mario Run, as said by Shigeru Miyamoto.
Indeed.
And the other interesting thing is how they said that one of the modes of the game will be called Toad Rally, which is almost kind of like a mode that you would normally see in racing games, where you might be battling, or in racing games, sometimes if you're doing a time trial over and over again, you can have a ghost car that represents the best time or a time that you're trying to beat sort of guide you, and you can race against this ghost car to get a better time. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of what this mode is. You pick an opponent and compete against their high score. You can compete against, people that you compete against include friends and random people online. And this mode, of course, has no flagpole, so it's just sort of like an endless runner. So you just keep running, collecting coins until time runs out. The other player's ghost is represented by a sticker, but they're there, they're ever present, and you're sort of racing against the sticker.
Mm-hmm. We've seen this before in, say, in F-Zero or Mario Kart games.
Yeah, of course.
Now, to clarify, this Toad Rally battle mode, that's more of an endless runner. The standard Super Mario Run game is auto runner.
It's an auto runner where...
Apologize, we should have made that distinction off the hop. But there's a flagpole at the end, like old Mario games.
Yeah, so you basically just... It's the way... Like, you play this game the way I play old Mario games, which is just like pedal to the metal, press right while running, and then just try to jump as much as possible, and then get your way through levels, which, by the way, it works for me.
I hate you.
It's just, if there's a type of game I'm really good at, it's old Mario Brother games.
And Mortal Kombat 3.
Well, maybe not so much anymore. I'm kind of out of practice with that one, but Mario games for sure.
Fair enough.
So I'm interested in playing this personally.
And you will be interested to know that initially it will come for iOS platforms starting ahead of the holiday 2016 release window, so likely December at some point.
Yes.
Is when this will be coming to the iOS platform.
But if you're an Android person like me, no word.
No word on when that will come out. I could imagine.
Probably into the new year.
A couple months, 4 to 6 months maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Would be my guess. We don't have an exact time frame on that. We're simply speculating.
Now, my guess would be at least a month.
Oh, certainly.
But maybe not more than four.
I have to say, this is a big, bold move by Nintendo, not only to announce their next mobile game, not only to have it be a Mario one, but to do so at an Apple event.
Yes, at a different company's, at a different company's venue. That's never been Nintendo's style.
No.
Nintendo has always been, we're Nintendo, we're controlling the Nintendo message, we're at a Nintendo event saying Nintendo 100 times. Here's Nintendo characters doing Nintendo things.
On Nintendo devices.
Yes, and Nintendo might provide a bit of a platform for other companies to say that they're pledging their allegiance to Nintendo by having games on Nintendo systems, but that's the only involvement I've ever seen Nintendo have with other companies. It's always smaller companies sort of that they're giving a little bit of Nintendo time to basically say, we love Nintendo. That's all I've ever seen. I've never seen Nintendo go out on someone else's stage to say, hi, we're bringing Nintendo to this big thing, which is kind of so not Nintendo, but also kind of interesting this is finally happening.
Well, for so many years, Nintendo as a company was chastised for not getting into mobile gaming, and they seem to, I guess, kind of dip their toe into the water earlier this year with the release of Miitomo, which enjoyed a fairly successful launch, but the usership quickly died out once people got their hands on it and saw it was, nothing substantial enough to hold attention.
No.
However, announcing that their next couple mobile games would focus on existing properties such as Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing for sure is a property that will be successful as a mobile title.
Absolutely. I don't know how it couldn't be successful.
I don't even know what they would do with it, and I don't care. It will be successful, just given the nature of what Animal Crossing is on Nintendo platforms. But to show up to an Apple event, Apple, one of, if not the biggest companies in the world.
Oh yeah.
A technology company at that. It's not as though they're showing up for a Walmart press conference to announce special Nintendo zones in Walmart stores or anything.
Or some other weird, cross-industry thing where they're showing up at, like, some travel company's thing to say that they have some sort of Mario-themed travel deal going on.
No.
Or some sort of theme park to visit or
well,
something.
Well, hell, like even the, even last year when the partnership was announced between Nintendo and Universal for Nintendo properties to come to Universal theme parks around the world, that was a press release. That was not an event.
No.
And it could have easily been.
And those are two separate industries.
They are.
Like, Nintendo is providing characters not for other some other technology company, because Nintendo is a technology company.
And for some people, that might strike them as being weird that Nintendo is now in partnership with Apple. Obviously, there's some kind of relationship between the two, given the timed exclusivity of Super Mario Run on the iOS platform versus the Android platform. There has to be something there, otherwise they release at the same time and Miyamoto does not appear on stage.
No, exactly. And if anything else, Miyamoto? Really? Like, why not, you know, I'd say someone lesser like Reggie Fils-Aimé, even though he is the president of Nintendo of America, but the president of Nintendo America is not Shigeru Miyamoto.
That's true.
I mean, Shigeru Miyamoto sort of pulls rank just in terms of status in the industry, I think.
Oh, he does. And I think even Reggie Fils-Aimé would concede to that, given the legacy that Miyamoto has, not only with the company, but with the industry as a whole.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know if there's anyone else who could touch it at this point.
No, I don't think so.
Given his body of work, and how many people will cite his body of work and the games he's worked on and produced as the reasons why they've gotten into the industry and how they've been inspired by it. So he has that cachet and credibility to him. And also, he is intrinsically linked with the character of Mario.
Yep.
They go together. Just as Mario and Luigi go together, he is forever known as the creator and father of Mario. If he was a one-trick pony and that's all he did, hell, that is fine in itself.
Yeah, but he's not. He's also done plenty of other games, created plenty of other iconic characters. Mario's not his only thing, which is mind-blowing. But, yeah, so he, yeah. This is huge news.
It absolutely is, and it came out of left field. There was no inkling, no sniff, no hint, not even any smoke that might have intimated loosely or in any roundabout fashion that Nintendo had some sort of partnership to work together with Apple and release a mobile game in a timed exclusive fashion on iOS platforms. There was no hint of that in the industry. Surprise!
Yeah,
absolute surprise. And the other thing I'm wondering is Super Mario Run, will they use this run type auto runner mobile game as kind of a new separate franchise and just drop in new characters? Will we see like a Donkey Kong Run? You know,
where I mean, it makes sense. Kirby Run,
Ice Climbers Run,
Kid Icarus Run.
I've said before that Ice Climbers,
Metroid Run. There's a huge like swath of Nintendo characters that
imagine Super Metroid Run.
Yeah,
how fantastic that could potentially be.
Yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of Nintendo properties that an idea like that could lend itself to. Maybe that's what they're going to do instead of microtransactions for this game. They're just going to sort of like iterate on a number of different run type titles with different characters and different backgrounds.
Or even different level types too. I mean, imagine how different a Donkey Kong Run game would be compared to a Mario Run game. You'd have a lot more, perhaps barrels and vines involved, and things of that nature.
Yeah.
To harken back to the platforming levels of Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah.
Something in that vein or whatnot. Or a new Ice Climbers game. You know, in auto runner fashion. Again, as you mentioned, Kid Icarus could work very well too.
Yeah.
And so we'll see where Nintendo goes from here. But damn, that is a hell of a surprise. And this has been a surprising year for good Nintendo news.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
I mean, for the past couple years, Nintendo has, at least from the outside, looked like kind of a down-and-out company. Hell, even when they announced they'd only have one game at E3 this year, the Legend of Zelda game, a lot of us were concerned that they were banking a lot on one title and basically announcing that the Wii U is on its way out. They aren't going to release many games for it, if any, this year. It has not looked like a good, healthy time for Nintendo, but there are yet more positive indicators, and Super Mario Run gained huge positive attention when it was announced.
Oh, yeah.
There's a demand for this game now, and when it releases in December, there will be a lot of initial purchases.
Yep.
Absolutely will be, so.
Especially depending on what they set the price point at. I mean, as long as they don't do something stupid and try to sell it for $20, I mean, if it's like a $5 game, people will buy that like crazy.
Yeah, I could see that.
I could see that being successful on like almost an Angry Birds type scale.
Ooh. Yeah, that is,
Now, maybe not at an Angry Birds type scale, necessarily.
Angry Birds was Angry Birds is,
yeah.
Right.
It was.
Okay.
But I think there was also a version you could buy that wasn't ad supported. But, I mean, that might even be another option for Nintendo to sort of do down the road, release a free version that just has ads between levels or something.
Again, they can go so many different directions with this. And also like to point out that Shigeru Miyamoto was being asked by reporters, I believe one from Time Magazine, after his appearance at the Apple press event, and asked, why Apple, why iOS? And the gist of his response was, well, they want to, release a game and release this game where the gamers are, and that's mobile gaming. Not to say that they're going to move away from consoles, but I think more of an acknowledgement that this is where the industry is heading.
Yeah, it's a different landscape now than it was even 5 years ago.
It was. And I'd also like to point out, too, Super Mario Run, it'll come out for iOS, it'll come out for Android. Rest assured, it will also come out on Nintendo NX. And you will be able to play it on NX at some point.
Maybe. I don't know if that'll be true.
I see a future where that is true.
I could see it being a mini game mode of a different game, maybe a more full Mario Brothers game. I don't know if that would be true though, just based on the fact that I feel like they don't want to take away from this market too much that they're trying to establish.
Consequently, it would have a long enough runway before the NX is eventually released. That I don't know if it would necessarily be in direct competition, because by the time NX comes out, those people who want it will likely already have it.
Yeah.
On their whatever platform, and they could use it to say, and position the NX as being a system where, it draws people in with the familiar title of Super Mario Run and can then sell them on these other Nintendo titles. Would be my thinking.
Yeah. I still think that they would be running the risk of people just basically saying, oh, so NX is just another crappy, console that has no power and only plays phone games. Great.
That's a risk too.
That part I would be less confident of saying, but we'll see.
Time will certainly tell, as we still await yet more details of the Nintendo NX and what it is. But, speaking of next consoles, later Wednesday, as you may have heard, Sony held an event at the PlayStation Theater in New York City in Times Square. And as widely expected, they showed off the next Sony platform. It is not called Neo. It is not PlayStation 4.5. It is not PlayStation 5. It is, in fact, called PlayStation 4 Pro.
Yeah.
Pro.
Because nothing says a little bit better than tacking the word pro on the end of it.
Hey,
it's worked for Apple with the MacBook.
Touche.
I mean, MacBook Pro.
That is true. And also to, it's put on products to justify a higher price point and differentiate it from the common, lower tier priced items, more consumer friendly or maybe entry level consumer, electronics products. But pro, if you're buying something pro, you're willing to shell out a few extra bucks, but you're getting something well worth it in return. And, Sony is pegging that return, that people will perceive the doubled graphics power, the terabyte hard drive, the new architecture, the ability to display much better looking games, the presence of an HDR10 standard or just HDR high dynamic range imaging, to just really give a lot of pop to the colors on the screen that this game, that this device can create, as justifying the $500 Canadian price point, $400 US price point, or 350 British pound price point. Also, not only did Sony announce the device as was expected, not only did they announce the price points, but they also announced its release date, which is surprising because this device, the PlayStation 4 Pro, is set to come out on November 10th. No, I'm not getting this as a birthday present, but still, November 10th, which is a lot earlier than I thought it would be. I expected this as a 2017 item.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they were building it up and the impression that we certainly got from all of the secrecy surrounding this thing was that it's like this big top secret thing that's in R&D and they're just sort of going to be releasing details about it during this thing. Not the full shebang-a-bang, or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, whew.
To bring back an old phrase that I don't think people say anymore.
Oh, no, they don't. by gumbo. And it's really to their detriment. They don't say it. I have to add that.
Yes.
But nevertheless, Sony really catching people off guard, and I wonder how much of this motivation to get the system out this year was brought on by Project Scorpio and whatever Microsoft revealed of that system still in development at the end of their E3 conference. Now we know Project Scorpio is set for a 2017 release. So from a positioning standpoint, I fully get where Sony's coming from to get this device out ahead of time and maybe try and capture the demographic of gaming public who will pay a bit more for a new, slightly more powerful, better imaging system.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting. However, I mean, just as someone that is still poised to buy a PlayStation 4, I don't know if I'm necessarily sold on this because I don't have a 4K TV.
Ah, yes. And we get to the big rub of the PlayStation 4 Pro.
Yes. One of the main selling points of it is its 4K display capabilities.
Indeed. It will not have a 4K Blu-ray drive. And so be aware of that. It still has very much the same architecture of the PlayStation 4, just with better graphical capabilities. But the big rub of this system is its output, and it is going to have a bit of a different output for almost everybody because the system will be able to detect what kind of display it's plugged into and then try and get the best out of that. But the best of what it can do will fully depend on your display device.
Yeah.
Be it monitor, be it TV set, or what have you. The standards of it, is it 720, is it 1080, 1920, is it a 4K device, does it have an HDR10 standard embedded in it, what can it do?
It'll look really good, it'll use all of the HDR magic that's available to it to get the most out of your TV, but if your TV is not an ultra high definition 4K device, you're never going to get the full potential. So that's sort of the little caveat there. So unless you're also planning on getting a 4K TV and getting yourself completely future-proofed with this thing, I don't know if it's worth the extra $100.
That's certainly
and,
a...
And I do say extra $100 because they did actually reveal information about another device as well.
Indeed. Well, more officially revealing what had kind of already jumped the gun.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knew that the PlayStation 4 Slim was going to be a thing. They just bizarrely refused to talk about it for whatever reason, because I guess...
Well, they were waiting for this.
They were just defiantly waiting for this, saying, no, we booked time to talk about this. Damn it, we're going to wait for this time to talk about it.
Even though the meat and potatoes of the conference was the PlayStation 4 Pro.
Yeah, but they did confirm 100% that there's going to be a PlayStation 4 Slim, which has specs very similar to the current PlayStation 4. It's about half of the width, or thickness, I should say, of the current PlayStation 4, and it will run for about $300 US in most markets.
Or more than that in Canada.
Well, yeah. Well, $300 US, whatever they want to translate that to Canadian dollars.
Likely $350. It's also going to release, or slated for release, in most markets on September 15th. And I guess the idea between the hardware revision of the PlayStation 4 Slim, which is now just the PlayStation 4. They're not segmenting it, giving it a different name. It's just that's what the base PlayStation 4 is and looks like now.
Yeah.
And the PlayStation 4 Pro is now designed in a complementary way to that. If you see the two of them side by side, the PlayStation 4 Slim is kind of a two-tier double-decker looking shape, whereas the PlayStation 4 Pro has that extra layer on top.
Yes, as a coworker of mine put it, more ridges equals more power. And then he then proceeded to post a picture of Tim Allen, which of course made me laugh.
That's the appropriate thing to do.
But yes, so that's probably going to be the more economically viable option. I mean, I don't want to shoot down entirely getting the Pro, but, you know, it is really dependent on the display capabilities that you have as well. And unless you do have a 4K TV, you're not getting the most out of it.
You aren't. You really aren't. I mean, Sony has said that, or based on what they've said, they're going to try and make it as backward friendly with existing, games or games that have previously been released on the PlayStation 4 as possible. Developers can create a patch, for those games that are already out on PlayStation 4 to then update them to take advantage of the PS4 Pro's capabilities, its higher graphical processing, its HDR imaging standard.
Yes. However, that is another kind of interesting sticking point here, because there was other information released during this PlayStation event of Sony's from this past Wednesday that was mentioned as well, even though they were trying to sell HDR as a big thing for the PlayStation 4 Pro.
They went hard on HDR.
They went super hard on HDR, but they also then went on to say that they're going to be rolling out a firmware update for all PlayStations, not just the Pro, so PlayStation Original, PlayStation Prime, or whatever you want to call it.
PS4 Previous.
Yeah, Previous S4, followed... And the PlayStation 4 Slim or current S4.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe the hardware revision will come with the HDR standard already in it.
Yes.
But
they'll also be, basically they're releasing a firmware update for old versions of PlayStation as well. So there will be HDR technology in every single PlayStation 4 out there.
Yes.
Pro or otherwise.
Yes.
So
that was a surprising development. But again, if the existing PlayStation 4 is getting the HDR standard. The HDR standard is one of the main selling points of the Pro. All that's really left is better graphical processing power.
Yeah.
But.
So, if you, the idea of it being 4K is really great, and it future-proofs them probably for another 4 years.
It does.
I think. It does get them a few more years out of this console, which is good. But if the games are going to be the same and they still have to make sure that games work on both systems, if you're anything like me, you're going to want to get a PlayStation Slim or find an old PlayStation for sale if they're going to be clearing them out. That's what I'm going to be looking at.
A fine choice. Once you, you know, let the old bank funds replenish.
Yes, once all that damage gets, well, once the hurricane finishes doing its thing and, you know.
Well, you know what? We're not that far away from Christmas. So just start dropping hints to people around you like, hey, I could use a PlayStation 4 in my new house.
Yeah.
Just drop these subtle hints.
Or not so subtle hints.
Depends on how brash you want to be.
It's true.
Be like, hey, I'm a poor homeowner, so,
but I really want a PlayStation 4.
The new PlayStation 4 and whatnot said that it will also support the 4K streaming of various Netflix shows, the
YouTube app as well.
YouTube as well. So you can have some very high res content that way as well. In addition to that, there will be, games in development and various games shown off at the event, like Horizon Zero Dawn, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, and a few others that were shown off to make full use of the graphical processing ability and the HDR standard that just look lush and rich and vibrant. Oh, sorry, the new Spider-Man game,
right?
As well, that really looked fantastic, but they again are somewhat limited because they have to run on both the old system and the new system, so they can't make absolute complete use of the technology.
Yeah, well,
and tap into all the power.
I think they can, but it has to have a fallback, which is a little bit of hand wringing. But good news if you don't want to get in too deep with cashiola and whatnot. True.
Is this the new era of various console iterations we live in now? Just it has technology that is really dependent on your display.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see in the next few years where this goes, but maybe.
I don't know how I feel about this. I perhaps am old-fashioned and come from the school of thought of just one device. One device, and this is what you get.
Yeah, this is this generation. If you want something better, wait for next generation. But don't worry, we're going to make people squeeze every last drop out of this generation before we're done. But I guess if they want to be able to keep up with the constant arms race of and ever increasing popularity of the PC gaming side of things, which, you know, it's always been popular.
It has.
But it seems like it's more accessible now than it used to be, which is sort of, I guess, scary for console people, or console manufacturers, I should say. Yeah.
I'd also like to point out that, for the, specs nerds out there who were concerned and will compare this system against Project Scorpio, Microsoft made a big to-do in their reveal of Project Scorpio about the fact that it would utilize 6 teraflops of processing power. The PlayStation 4 Pro will use 4.2 teraflops of processing power. So it will have less teraflops than the Project Scorpio. Make of that what you will. Determine if that's something you're interested in, or is the 1.8 teraflop difference a deal breaker for you. Let us know. Email us info@thearcadeshow.com or message us on Twitter @thearcadeshow or on Facebook, facebook.com/thearcadeshow. Now let's turn our attention just ever so briefly back to Nintendo's appearance at the Apple event, where they announced again the new mobile game coming out this likely December before the holidays, Super Mario Run. Niantic chief John Hankey was also on stage at that event. Didn't get much attention because he's not Shigeru Miyamoto.
No, but he is involved with a project that Nintendo is loosely involved with, though not as much as people initially thought they were involved with.
True.
When the app released and Nintendo stock went up and then consequently back down once people came to their senses.
Yes.
The app, of course, being the global phenomenon that is Pokemon Go.
Yes.
And John Hankey actually basically first announced that, well, not first, but like most importantly, I suppose, announced that Pokemon Go will be coming to the Apple Watch, which is still a thing.
Indeed.
But he came on with the huge news that Pokemon Go surpassed 500 million downloads. Think about that for a second. 500 million downloads. That is half a billion people staring into a screen in their hand playing this game where you flick things at little monsters to put them into balls. Half a billion.
And again,
1/14th of the Earth's population.
The game still has yet to release in China.
Yeah.
Just think of that. There's still the largest market on Earth still has yet to get this device made available to them. This game, this experience.
Yeah.
So, a billion? Is it going to get to a billion downloads?
Will it get to be more than a billion downloads, I think, is what the question is.
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know, but this is an astonishing number. Now, that's just downloads. Daily active users is another metric entirely, and we spoke a couple of weeks ago about the fact that it appears the daily active user base of Pokemon Go is on the steady decline.
Yeah.
Which is, again, for reasons we said back then, to be expected.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're not, it's just, they can't sustain this forever. I mean, obviously, like, sustaining a fever pace can only go for so long. People will get bored with doing the same stuff over and over again. It's just a matter of fact. I mean, unless they come out with something drastically different for the game, they're not going to get the same, they're not going to hit that same pace again.
True, and also for other reasons outside the game entirely, just the seasons are changing, it's less pleasant to be outside in cooler temperatures. I mean, you really aren't going to want to go on a poke walk
no.
when it's cold in winter conditions or whatnot, blizzarding or what have you. Also, a good segment of the population has school again.
Yep.
Depending on what grade, what level, what institution they're in, they have school, they have studies, they have tests, they have homework. They can't spend time going out and looking for Pokemon.
No, and they can't defend their gyms anymore.
No.
No. Full disclosure, I uninstalled the app.
Fair enough.
Like, a while ago. It was killing my battery. Killing it, even when it wasn't running. Killing it.
All right, then.
But,
I will take your word for it. These are not my concerns.
No, they'll never be your concerns with that phone.
One day
when that flip phone dies.
It's like 8 years hence and it hasn't died yet, so I don't know, it's starting to look pretty immortal.
Yes, and also it looks pretty old, if that's what you mean, yes.
Well, you know, the million-year-old man was not exactly looking like a spring chicken, so I don't expect it to look fresh out of the box. I want it to look used, well-worn, you know, like that pair of jeans that still goes, or like that old vehicle that you know, is still running after all these years. Sure, it's going to look old, but...
And that the insurance company is really trying to get it off the air because it's, or off the road because it's not safe, and also doesn't meet current emission standards. Yes, if that's what you mean, yes.
Exactly.
You might be getting radon poisoning from that phone as we speak. I might be getting radon poisoning from across the room.
I like to think it's just really toughening up my immune system.
Radon seasoning? Making your steak taste that much better?
Delish. But speaking of Pokemon Go, just briefly, if you were wanting to get your hands on the Pokemon Go Plus, that little wrist watchy device, that piece of wearable technology that connects via Bluetooth to Pokemon Go and allows you to kind of put your phone back into your pocket so you don't have to stare at it the whole time.
Yeah.
We told you a couple weeks ago that it was going to be delayed due to the volume of pre-orders and the fact that all the pre-orders had sold out and there was a very large demand for it that was far outpacing the established supply for it, so they had to push it back a couple weeks. Good news, the item is now slated for a September 16th release. So if you are still into the Pokemon Go affair by that point, you'll be able to pick it up. Given the drop-off in usership, I'm suspecting that it'll be fairly easy to find somewhere that will sell it to you.
Oh, probably at this point, anyways.
But speaking of things that are not Pokemon Go and the complete opposite end of the game spectrum.
Yes, we now turn our attention back to, well, sort of a bit of an iconic character for our generation anyways, when we were younger, us being of the older side of the millennial spectrum.
Yes, the kind of the top end of it, very close to Gen X.
Yeah, we're sort of on the cusp there, but for us, one of the early edgy game heroes was, of course, Duke Nukem. When he moved out of the 2D realm into the 3D realm, with, you know, the full voice samples and the ripoffs of various action movie tropes, you know, this is my boomstick.
Yes.
Gonna kick ass and chew bubble gum and I'm all out of gum. Various other lines from 80s action movies and whatnot. Yeah, so Duke Nukem 3D was sort of an iconic game in that sense. Whatever else happened with the Duke Nukem character over the next 20 years, I should say, is sort of like, we all know, and
the
character was not treated properly.
Trials and tribulations, the ups, the downs, the further downs, the yet more downs, and yet the further downs.
Yes. But Duke Nukem 3D is still celebrating its 20th anniversary right away. And, as such, there is the 20th anniversary edition coming to all of the current consoles, which is not that remarkable in and of itself. I mean, that game has been re-released a few times in the past.
No.
But what is remarkable is the fact that there's some new levels for it.
There is. Some new, old-fashioned, classic Duke Nukem 3D content. The existence of this Duke Nukem 3D game was leaked a couple weeks ago, but officially confirmed at a panel held by Gearbox Software at PAX West, which I suppose was previously called PAX Prime, and before that was just PAX.
Yeah.
And now it's PAX West. In my day, it was PAX Prime. All this PAX directional-based affairs are confusing me.
Yeah.
I'm old and don't understand things anymore.
Yeah. The one I went to was PAX Prime, I think.
The kids are changing things.
So whatever. Yeah. So in this one, which is called the Anniversary Edition.
World Tour.
Yeah.
So, that's the full title. Duke Nukem 3D 20th Anniversary Edition World Tour.
Yeah.
So it's got some new music composed by the original sound designer. Also has some new lines for Duke, voiced by John St. John, who enjoys a drink or two.
He sure
when
does.
When he's at PAX.
That was Magfest.
Oh, was that? Oh, sorry, that was Magfest. Well, I assume it's no different.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a party animal.
Yeah, we ended up in a couple of room parties at Magfest and that he was at. During one drink judging competition, actually, that was very interesting. That was a party that quickly got out of control very fast.
Sure did. And then we somehow crossed paths with him later the same evening.
I think twice more.
At later stages of his evening.
Yes, his evening was progressing nicely from what I remember. That's our celebrity run-in with John St. John.
Exactly.
That we just talk about here, but
as Weird Al would term it in one of his songs, a lame claim to fame.
Indeed. It's a crap boast, I think you could say. But, so this whole new level, was actually created by the original designers, as we said.
Excellent. And also the, anniversary edition will come with the original graphics, but updated, or with updated visuals, updated frame rates, and as Gearbox president Randy Pitchford, you know, Gearbox, the company that holds the IP for Duke Nukem.
The legal owners of the whole intelligent property, you know, intellectual property, I should say.
Indeed. As he said at the panel at PAX West, quote, making it possible for Alan, Richard, Lee, and John to all come back together 20 years later to bring a whole new episode to the classic game is just one of those rare and incredible things that I hope will bring joy and happiness to hardcore video game fans, new and old. End quote. So, Duke Nukem is coming back. Still no word if there's going to be any brand new Duke Nukem adventures or Duke Nukem adventures. That is something that time will tell. If there's still an audience for new Duke Nukem.
Yes. Well, I mean, if Duke Nukem Forever was any indication of how well a new Duke Nukem game would do, I don't think there would be, But let's be fair, Duke Nukem Forever was not really a game you should judge anyone on, just given the unusual nature of its development cycle.
I don't know if that game really had a chance to succeed.
No, and just given how much culture itself changed over the entire development cycle of that game, it's really hard to kind of keep anything coherent, story-wise, soundbite-wise, mm-hmm. John St. John-wise, level-wise even. I mean,
it's true.
It straddled the line of a pre-Half-Life 2 and a post-Half-Life 2 video game landscape, which you can very much tell in the level designs as they're all over the place and weird as hell sometimes. But, yeah.
So that is Duke Nukem. The 90s, they live again.
Yes.
But speaking of 90s, I mean, along with Duke Nukem, the 90s were a heyday of just mascot-type games or companies trying to create iconic game characters that people can identify with.
Many of which with an edgy twist to them. I mean, Duke Nukem was not really an exception back then. I mean, Sonic the Hedgehog, even when Sega had Sonic the Hedgehog commercials, he was really quite an edgy character as well. Nintendo with the whole Play It Loud campaign went kind of dialed everything to 11. Mm-hmm. And other characters as well went a strangely edgy route as well with things like Earthworm Jim.
Yeah.
Was another.
Or if they didn't go edgy, they went crude.
Yeah, crude. I mean, like Boogerman type stuff.
Or Boogerman's the best example.
Yeah. Toe-Jam and Earl.
Exactly, Toe-Jam and Earl. But the 90s were just littered with mascot games. And if you are of a certain, field, and if your company you work for is, of a certain financial wherewithal, some of these classic gaming characters could become your exclusive intellectual property.
Yes, much like Gearbox with Duke Nukem several years ago, well, you could scour what Interplay owns or has owned for intellectual properties,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, have your pick if you have the money.
It's true. It was just announced, on Thursday of this week, September 8th, that Interplay, one of those companies that were around in the 90s and gave us the Earthworm Jim games, Boogerman, Clay Fighter series, a lot of these classic character games will be parting and are prepared to part with the majority of their video game assets and intellectual property, being prepared to sell the rights to up to 70 franchises and dozens of characters, with the LA-based development studio saying that they hope to see these characters brought to life in, quote, ways never possible before through the use of augmented reality and virtual reality. Now, they also say, Eric Kahn, the company president, says in the announcement, quote, Interplay has entertained millions of players with its well-recognized games, including Earthworm Jim, Dark Alliance, and Descent, with the proliferation of mobile, augmented reality, and virtual reality, plus other new forms of consumption. We believe that consumers are ready to experience and interact with Interplay's characters, stories, and gameplay in ways never possible before, end quote. So, this is not something that you can just go pick up off Kijiji, eBay, Amazon, or whatnot. You have to have both legal and serious financial representation to engage in these discussions.
Yes, you also very much likely have to be a game studio with a staff that is prepared to make a new whatever game, a new Descent title, a new Dark Alliance title, a new Earthworm Jim title. And also you have to be prepared if you're making a new Earthworm Jim title or one of these other iconic classic titles, if you're making a new entry into this series, be prepared for people to really be critical of you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Especially when you're talking about something like Earthworm Jim. That was another one of those iconic 90s franchises that was sort of everywhere in pop culture. There was an Earthworm Jim television show.
There was Earthworm Jim cartoons. Now, or cartoon, sorry, toys.
Yes, toys.
Yeah, toys. That's what I meant to say.
Yes, I just said the cartoon thing.
And I'm saying it too.
Yes, correct. No, it was a live action show too. No, there was not a live action show.
No, that'd be weird. Boogerman, one of those just very 90s characters, even the Clay Fighter series.
Yeah.
Very 90s with its start of Clay Fighter the First on Super Nintendo. And then eventually ending with Clay Fighter 63 and a third on N64. Or if you have lots of money, but not enough money to buy these characters, you could get Clay Fighter 63 and a third, the Sculptor's Cut, or Sculptor's Clay, the exclusive to Blockbuster version of the game that had like three or four new characters, including Sumo Santa and I think Boogerman and or Earthworm Jim. And God help you if you're trying to buy that game now on eBay. Mucho dinero.
Indeed.
Stupid amounts of dinero. But again, so many of those properties from the 90s were then leveraged into, as you said, cartoons.
Yep.
Which I think nicely segues into our Blast from the Past segment this week, which we're terming a retro cartoon bonanza.
Yes, an info dump, as it were, of just too much information for us to actually pare down, even though we're not going to talk about absolutely everything in depth, because a lot of these things were just sort of interesting footnotes to talk about briefly. But it's still kind of interesting that September was an interesting time around the years of 1991, 1986, and 1996.
Indeed.
Or debuts.
Either debuts or series ending. Various milestones for around seven animated programs.
Yes.
That either came or went within the past week at various five-year incremental milestone anniversaries.
Yes, 20, 25, and 30-year anniversaries.
Now, there's some of them that we've already spoken of on this show previously. Darkwing Duck being one of those shows, which on September 6th, celebrated its 25th anniversary, 25 years for Darkwing Duck.
Yes.
Good God.
But also, sharing almost the same day, in 1991 was Bucky O'Hare and the Toad Wars, trying to cash in, of course, on the whole anthropomorphic, edgy animal guy who was sort of like also an army guy. Kind of thing.
Basically action, anthropomorphized animal action thing.
Which was quite a thing in the 90s.
Oh God. Cowboys of Moo Mesa.
No, that's not also on the
list.
But there was like lots of them out there.
Basically
like
following in the trend started by and trying to cash in on the popularity of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes, of course, the whole trendsetter, but yes. But interestingly enough also was another cartoon that almost no one remembers, but I do because I remember watching, I think the whole series because I thought it was so bizarre and just, I couldn't believe it was a thing. And it perfectly sums up what was the flash in the pan of MC Hammer, which he rose to meteoric stardom super fast and then just as quickly pretty much faded into obscurity. The definition of a flash in the pan, maybe not a one-hit wonder because he did have a couple of hits and
True.
A big TV show.
He did.
Which, a couple of big TV shows actually. There was this one and a live action show as well.
He had a live action show?
He did.
Wow.
But, I think it was called Stanley or something where he was going by his real name. But anyway.
Zero recollection of this.
Yes. My brain is awash of stupid information that I will forever remember for some reason.
And is tuned to the MC Hammer frequency.
Not entirely, just for some reason, these, sometimes he pops in there. But this show was Hammerman, I should say.
Hammerman, yes.
Which was, followed the adventures of the losery Stanley, whose life changed when he happened upon some magic shoes that talked. And when he put them on, he became MC Hammer.
No, he became Hammerman.
Sorry, he became Hammerman.
Yes.
All of his, his look became the MC Hammer look with the parachute pants and the dance
moves. The gold chain.
And the gold chain and the whole look, basically. I don't think you could get a much more 90s cartoon than that.
I'm struggling to think of one, and I don't know if there is one that is so violently 90s.
Yeah.
Absolutely violently 90s, considering it was based around a very flash-in-the-pan musical artist who is also very much of that 90s era.
Yeah. I mean, the only closer, the closest show I can think of would be Pro Stars. In terms of just summing up, taking a snapshot of pop culture at the current time, whereas Hammerman was sort of, you know, the musical landscape, and Pro Stars was the sports landscape.
True. The slight difference being, while Pro Stars as the series and the serial didn't last for very long, I mean, at least the athletes who were, you know, the characters represented in the show had, you know, careers that's, you know, went into the 80s, and in the cases of Michael Jordan and Wayne Gretzky's, further into the 90s as well.
Yes.
And far course, beyond that early era.
Yeah, and if Bo Jackson didn't have that injury, I'm sure his would have as well.
It certainly would have. But Hammerman, God! In looking back on the show and in reading about it and watching the old clips on YouTube, this clearly was a rush job.
Oh yeah.
To just get it out the door because MC Hammer is hot right now.
So quick, he's popular. Get something out there. Quick, quick, quick.
Exactly.
Get the Korean animators on the phone.
Exactly. The idea of magical talking shoes, which turn him into some kind of
super dancer,
street level superhero who could dance and then also produce bars of music.
Yes, which he would, and pianos, I recall.
Yes, piano keys and
piano keys that he would just use to travel around on, which is so dumb.
As Iceman from X-Men can create waves of ice that he can just kind of surf around on and whatnot, Hammerman could do that, but piano keys and like music notes.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, it did not last for long.
No, I mean,
let's be clear. It only lasted until basically December of that same year. So it's 13 episode run, and that was that.
Yeah, it had about the same length of time run as Bucky O'Hare and the Toad Wars, which Bucky O'Hare, I believe, lived on a little bit better as the classic video game title.
And also before that, it was a comic book series.
Yeah. But
and I believe still continued as a comic series after that.
And the last show, of course, that debuted on the same day back in 91 was Tasmania, which was another bizarre idea for a show that actually surprisingly lasted 4 years.
I didn't realize that until I looked it up.
No, because I had almost zero recollection of the show. I must have just, it must have been one of those shows that I watched casually a few times here and there and found it fun. I can imagine myself finding it funny at first and then getting really tired with the premise really quickly.
Because the premise makes no goddamn sense when you think of the character, the Looney Tunes character of Taz, the Tasmanian Devil. We know him to be a whirling dervish, who speaks like a slobbering monster, creates chaos and destruction wherever he goes, and oftentimes, as we've seen in the old cartoons, wanting to eat Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a character you can create a kids cartoon around. However, some executives at Warner Brothers and Fox decided to do that very thing, the end result being Tasmania. So how do you take a character that is an incoherent, destructive monster and turn him into a likable character that kids can watch and parents would feel good letting their kids watch?
Well, what you do is you basically take a 50s family sitcom like Leave It to Beaver or whatnot, but then you just replace the main character. Of course, if you take Leave It to Beaver almost exactly, actually, with the character of Beaver being one of the children, except replace Beaver with the Tasmanian Devil and just have everyone else act towards the Tasmanian Devil like everyone acted towards Beaver. If that doesn't make sense to you, good, because it doesn't make sense to us either. But that's what the show was.
We're not kidding either. This is, even just look up the you know, initial promo art you can find for Tasmania on a Google image search. You will see Taz in the middle of the frame, his doting dad in his, you know, leisure bowling shirt behind him, doting mom who probably has a roast in the oven.
Yep.
Right behind him, younger teenage sister beside him, and super young, very, kid brother, down on the floor beside him as well. They all look up to him and they all speak normally. Taz is the only one who still speaks in his very spitty, incoherent language.
Yeah.
But they can all understand him fine. You can understand his family fine. They are speaking, King's English. But this was a show that got 3 seasons. Yeah. It even got a Sega Genesis game. It may have also been on Super Nintendo. I don't recall. I simply recall seeing the case at the rental store.
Yeah. And you were looking, obviously, for the Sega titles.
Well, of course. And I'm sure I rented it and didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm sure I rented it for Super Nintendo and also didn't enjoy it.
Now, I don't recall watching much of it. Simply because where I lived, we did not have the Fox station that carried it, because this was a show on the Fox Kids programming block on Saturday mornings, which is weird when you consider it was done by Warner Brothers.
Yeah, but I guess Warner Brothers did have an agreement, I guess, for a period of time with Fox, it seems, that ran out sometime around when they started doing, I guess, Pinky and the Brain, or Pinky, some show in and around that period, or Freakazoid, or something like that.
Kind of say maybe 95, 96, once the WB got its own actual cable television network.
Yeah.
And could produce its own content for its own station. But
yes, but those are the early 90s. Another interesting, if we go back further to 30 years ago, early September, 30 years ago, was a very interesting time for Ghostbusters.
Within a span of 5 days, we got 2 Ghostbusters cartoons.
Yes. Now, you might be thinking, wait a minute, I only remember one Ghostbusters cartoon, the real Ghostbusters. And you're correct. That was the more popular one. That was the one that was based on the then popular Dan Aykroyd,
Bill Murray,
Harold Ramis,
Ernie Hudson,
like
Ivan
Reitman, classic comedy horror movie.
Rick Moranis, Gorney,
sci-fi. What? It was a classic. It's a classic movie.
Yes.
By all measures of any sort of thing, the original Ghostbusters is a classic movie, and a thing that also happened throughout the 80s and 90s. Not so much anymore, but it was a thing where, in case you don't remember or you're too young, they always made a cartoon based on any movie that was sort of kid friendly. If it was a popular kid friendly movie, they were going to make a cartoon about it. 100%. This was a thing that was guaranteed to happen. The real Ghostbusters was no exception. It went on for a number of seasons.
It was actually a very successful cartoon. Very, very successful cartoon. Got its debut, as you said, 30 years ago, specifically on September 13th, but lasted all the way until pretty much 6 years exactly later, not ending until September 5th of 92. So a good 6 years of programming, and basically every monster, demon, ghost you could think of, they tackled on that show.
Yeah.
And because kids kept watching, and also the licensing and merchandising for Ghostbusters at that time was huge.
Oh yeah.
The toys, the cereal, the Heinz canned pasta, which I used to eat, the Heinz ghost, or not Heinz, but the bags of Ghostbuster gummies, which I remember I used to get all the time from Toys R Us.
The Ghostbusters, kids meal toys that they had at Burger King.
Yes.
Which, and other Ghostbusters related toys as well, especially for your bikes.
I remember
my sister had the Slimer horn and I had the Ecto Siren.
Yes. If you are from that era, you remember these because you had them. You absolutely had them. Yeah. Or the Proton Pack. Like the play dress up plastic, blue hollow Proton Pack.
Yeah, or the trap.
Yes. You had the trap as well. So you had those things all because the real Ghostbusters was a really popular show that you no doubt watch.
Yeah. But if you were confused and looking at TV listings back then, there was a chance that you also accidentally tuned into Filmation's Ghostbusters.
Or as it was simply known back then, Ghostbusters.
Yes.
In the years since, it's been kind of termed for clarity and named for clarity, Filmation's Ghostbusters, the production company behind it.
Yes.
So what's the difference?
Well, the difference is that Filmation's Ghostbusters, as best as we can tell, was based on, I think it was a British live-action television show.
From the 70s.
From the 70s, called Ghostbusters, oddly enough. I guess Dan Aykroyd must not have realized this. He seems like he's a pretty thorough guy when he comes to doing due diligence, but we didn't have the internet or anything back then, so...
Well, I believe, too, that it, since it was from the 70s, when it came time for the movie, they could get away with calling the movie Ghostbusters. They probably just paid a nominal license fee.
Yeah, if that was even an issue. But, yeah, so this show was completely different. I think it was like a loosely similar idea where it was like almost like a Scooby-Doo type gang that would go around... I guess solving ghost related mysteries or doing
stuff busting ghosts. There was an element of technology they had. I believe one guy had some weird 1950 style looking oversized ghost zapper that may have also been like a vacuum that would suck ghosts in. But there was an element where, some guy had a camera, some kind of spirit camera that I believe would take pictures of ghosts as well.
And one of the characters was a gorilla,
which is, makes sense on a cartoon, yet on the 1970s live-action show called The Ghostbusters, one of the characters was a gorilla.
Yeah, that also made no sense.
Not a real gorilla, that's cruel. But it was a guy in a gorilla costume.
Yeah.
It was a kid's live, like, centric and focused live-action series.
Yes. And but the still, cartoon was also obviously a kid's focused series.
I mean, it still had the same two characters, two live act people characters, human characters from the live action series, but it also had a gorilla again, and a buggy, like an open air, like turn of the century buggy. Looked like it could have been based on a Model T with a huge emblem on the front on what would be the radiator grill, just a circular emblem. Of a black and, you know, of a white ghost on a black background. And I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, people, but I have a recollection of at times on Filmation's Ghostbusters, that ghost on the front of their car just coming out and like something with the ghost like morphing out of there or like stretching out of there and stuff happening with the car.
Well, I certainly can't verify or deny that. As I said, I only probably tuned into the show a couple of times by accident back in the day, thinking I was going to be watching the real Ghostbusters because I saw Ghostbusters. And, you know, we used to have to read, you know, TV listings in a newspaper back then because we didn't have TV on demand. And good luck if there was a television listings channel.
That, I don't think they had those back then.
No. But, yeah, so it probably just said Ghostbusters, and I thought, Ghostbusters? I want to watch Ghostbusters right now. So I would turn the TV to that channel, and I was immediately confused. I had no idea what was going on. I was like, is this a joke? Why is this called Ghostbusters? This isn't Ghostbusters.
Obviously, you and many other kids, because that version of Ghostbusters, with the not Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd one, only lasted about 13-ish episodes, coming to an end on December 5th of 1986. So it did not make it past 3 months of airing, so it was basically one and done, one season and done for that. Obviously, completely dwarfed in terms of popularity and interest by the real Ghostbusters. So if you've ever wondered just why that 80s cartoon version of the movie was called that, it's because there was another show exactly at that same time.
Yeah, and it was based on an original, far less interesting British program.
That was initially called
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters, and that's why you could get away with using that name.
Yeah.
It was the same kind of company doing it. So that was certainly an oddity, but we mentioned one of the shows celebrating a 25th anniversary was Darkwing Duck, a classic Disney cartoon from the Disney afternoons. And as time went on, I guess kind of the quality and uniqueness of the Disney afternoon cartoons kind of started to wane as we got into the mid and latter part of the 90s.
Yeah, so much so that by 1996, when we see, I think it was one of, if not the last Disney cartoon shows of that classic era of Disney cartoon shows that started with Gummy Bears way back in the late 80s, or maybe it was early 90s, I don't exactly
recall. Late 80s, I believe it was like 88 or 89.
But we then saw a show, like a show that's celebrating a 20th anniversary that also lasted for about a, I think it was two seasons, maybe, no, it looks like it was about a season.
Yeah, one season. Only lasted about 4 months, but.
Yeah, but this was Mighty Ducks, the animated series.
Now, unlike, say, Bucky O'Hare or Darkwing Duck or the Real Ghostbusters, which had a strong toy tie-in merchandising arm, that really was there to serve other licensing purposes that were products you could get at the store, Mighty Ducks, the animated series, was a tie-in to a professional sports franchise.
Yes, slash sort of driving a franchise of movies further into the ground.
If you recall, back in the early 90s, Disney had that very uplifting family-oriented sports movie called The Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
About the ragtag group of team from Minnesota. They go on, they beat the Hawks, they become state champions. Everyone feels good about themselves. Well, because that did so well, Disney ended up acquiring an expansion franchise for the NHL to play in Anaheim, California at the what was then known as the Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim. And by the time the second Mighty Ducks movie came around, D2, that franchise had just begun play, and which is why in the second Mighty Ducks movie you have...
Yeah, when they were handed out their brand new jerseys.
Yeah, to be Ducks again instead of Team USA.
Yeah.
The jerseys they got were the actual Anaheim Mighty Ducks jerseys.
Yeah, the NHL jerseys, like just straight up the same logo and everything.
And even Paul Kariya, who was the star player for the Anaheim Mighty Ducks early in their existence, made an appearance in the movie.
Yep. I remember that.
So after that, then came, well, Disney acquired ABC. They got rid of ABC Saturday Morning, made it a Disney programming block, which is when they brought back Doug on there. And one of the shows they had on there was Mighty Ducks, the animated series, which took the idea of Ducks and Mighty Ducks and made them a very young boy, 10 to 12 year old demographic, young boy focused show, action adventure series about alien ducks fighting whatever menace in space.
But they were also hockey players.
They were also hockey players. And the leader of the group was Wild Wing. Why is that weird? Because Wild Wing was the mascot for the franchise. Like every team has their like fluffy fuzzy mascot. Wild Wing was that for the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Except they turned him into a much more buff hero. And yet he was still wearing the same, like, duck goalie mask that was in the logo that Wild Wing wears on his mascot outfit.
Yeah.
Except the leader in the cartoon could touch it. It would turn gold and red, and he had different vision power things.
It was a dumb show.
It was terrible.
I mean, granted, by that time, I was a little bit, you know, out of the demographic. Maybe I would have liked it a little bit more if I was a few years younger, but it doesn't match up with the quality. It's just interesting just to say that so many of these different shows had interesting 20 to 30 year anniversaries.
Indeed. And so many of them are distinct relics from their era.
Yeah.
Like again, Hammerman.
Yeah. A cartoon featuring MC Hammer, that's basically like the most thrown together thing you can ever see. Just watch some clips on YouTube.
Exactly.
That'll be enough.
The intro. You get the gist of the show from the intro. And come to think of it, kind of odd that MC Hammer would get a cartoon, yet Vanilla Ice didn't.
Well, he did get a couple movies.
That's true, he did. I guess that's the trade-off.
Yeah.
And
I'd go for a movie before a cartoon, personally, if it was me.
I would take whichever one pays more.
Yep. All about dat cash.
Yeah. No bones about it.
You're a sellout right to the end. also right from the beginning.
Damn right. I have scruples for sale. Scruples for sale. No, not really. But let's talk.
Yes.
And we can talk by getting in touch with us. You can email us info@thearcadeshow.com. Use the contact us form on our website, which once again is thearcadeshow.com, or reach out and connect with us on Twitter. Follow us. We are at The Arcade Show, and on Facebook, facebook.com/TheArcadeShow. And yeah, just, we should probably take a moment to reiterate that we are going to be taking the next 3 weeks off, time and schedule and, well,
life.
Yeah. Largely because Dennis, again, is moving into a house.
Hooray!
Or at least that's the plan.
Yes, that's the plan. Fingers crossed. Knock on wood.
Exactly. That is the plan, to be moving into a house. And again, if you've ever done any moving, you know it's a very big, very time-consuming, focus-consuming job to just get everything, make sure you have everything, pack everything away, transport everything, unpack everything, and just try to resettle into the life of your new abode. And all that. So you will be busy dealing with that, but we will return. We are not going away indefinitely. We are going to give you a date. We'll be back with a new program on October 7th.
Yes. Come hell or high water. That's when we'll be back.
Friday, October 7th. Mark it on your calendars. We'll be back at the start of a new month. Refreshed, I assume. Oh, I'll be. You won't be.
I won't be. I'll be frazzled as hell.
I can't wait to see the toll it's taken on you at that point, and just how much more gray you've gone.
Yes. The couple of gray hairs in my beard will probably multiply.
Well, you can only hope for the full Steve Martin effect, just white in one shot.
Yep. One and done.
Just overnight. The first night in your new place, foomp, there you go.
It's like, whoa, there it went. Okay.
Oh, that's what paying for a house does. Now I know what caused it for Steve Martin. But once again, we'll be off the next few weeks, and Friday, October 7th is when the next new show will get posted. In the meantime, to get your fix of the arcade, we encourage you to check out all the previous episodes we have available on our iTunes page, also on our Google Play page. We are in the podcast section of Google Play. You can find links to those on our website, thearcadeshow.com.
And of course, we only have the last year's worth of episodes on there. So if you really want to go back way further than that, come to our website. We have a page with the full archives on it.
Indeed. It's just the archives page.
Yep.
You can find the link to it right on the menu bar of our website. Basically where we have links for all the different pages.
Yeah. Just thearcadeshow.com. That's where you can get us.
Exactly. You can find everything right there. Links again to our iTunes, our Google Play pages, and our archives, where we have as many episodes in the archives as we can possibly get our hands on from past years. So if you have a voracious appetite for the arcade, that should satisfy you for the next couple weeks. But that wraps us up for this week. We have said all that we need to say, and we thank you so much for joining us and being patient with us. Because once again, the next couple of weeks we're off, but we will be back once again on Friday, October 7th. So until then, good night, everybody.
Good night.